Support comes from the Bristol Renaissance Fair. Eat, drink, and be merry. Succulent treats, sinful sweets, dashing and clashing nights, music and laughter. The Bristol Renaissance Fair is open weekends through Labor Day, located just west of I-94, near the state line.
Support comes from Kenosha County ADRC. Caravan is now offering expanded weekend hours Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 6. Rides available for elders and persons with disability, $4 one-way fares, reservations required one day in advance. Call 262-658-9093. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Valkovsky, a former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today we have guests from the Racine Unified School District and the mental health professionals with whom they contract for service to students and staff. We will be discussing special challenges faced by children, families, and teachers returning to in-person schooling after a rough school year last year, and the kinds of help that Racine Unified has innovated to offer to students in their schools. So we have four really special guests today. Julie Hiller joined Racine Unified School District in 2017 as manager of the Racine Collaborative for Children's Mental Health. She works collaboratively with community partners to assist with improving access and services for children in need of mental health care. Her main focus has been working in partnership with Racine Unified Schools to implement school-based and community-based mental health clinics and programming. Welcome, Julie.
Thanks, Karen, for having me today. I'm honored to have a discussion around the mental health of our students.
Yes. Christine Jacobs, a licensed clinical social worker, is a child and family therapist with Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. She works as a school-based therapist at Knapp Elementary School in Racine, and has been in this role for nearly 5 years. She holds a master's degree in social welfare from UCLA and has dedicated her 17-year career to working with children and families. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. Welcome. Hello. I'm glad to be here today.
Okay. Missy Demoski is an assistant principal at Knapp Elementary School, and I correct me if I said that wrong. She has worked with Racine Unified for 28 years and at Knapp for the past year. Missy works collaboratively with Christine and Julie on a regular basis regarding Knapp's school-based mental health clinic. Welcome, Missy.
Thanks, Karen. It's Demoski, but you were very, very close. So okay. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. As somebody who's both first and last name are frequently mispronounced, I will just say, you know, like I have solidarity.
We get it.
And last but not least is Jessica Safransky-Schott, the Chief Operating Officer at the United Way of Racine County. She has been with the organization professionally for 15 years, but her connection to the United Way began in the mid-1990s when she volunteered for a Youth as Grantmakers program that received United Way funding. In her current role, she oversees the day-to-day work of the organization. Recently, she led a successful collaborative partnership that secured a multi-year federal grant to support United Way of Racine County's community school work. She is committed to using data to reveal inequities and drive continuous improvement. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so in the interest of full disclosure, I would just say that Jessica was a former student of mine at Carthage College, and she used to babysit my son. So we have a lot. So we have long-term roots, not quite as far back as Racine United Way, however. So Racine has a really unique model for approaching children's mental health. So can you please tell us what you mean by a model and how Racine's is unique? I think Julie's going to take this one.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. First of all, it's been a great journey, and I do always want to start out that we have been on a journey. At Racine Unified School District, we did start to address the mental health needs of students back in 2012. And part of what was happening in our community at that time, when there was a lot of community members talking about difficulty accessing services, especially around children and how that was impacting our children in our community. So one of our community assets in Racine is the Johnson Foundation at Wingspread, which really provides an impact convening model to help diverse partners gather to share ideas, concerns, and collectively develop plans for positive change. So out of our convening experience at the Johnson Foundation at Wingspread, we did develop our community collaborative, which is today the Racine Collaborative for Children's Mental Health. And really the goal of our collaborative is to create some innovative solutions to address the unmet mental health needs of our kids in our community. So a lot of our members are like community leaders, nonprofit, healthcare organizations. Racine Unified School District being real instrumental representation from administration and student support staff, our human service provider, faith leaders, funders, parents, caregivers, and those with lived experience. So you can see we have a diverse group of people that have come together to look at this issue. And really understanding the importance of meeting our partners together to say, what do we want to do? So really, as our collaborative formed, we really set a pace of looking at this issue of access to services for our kids. And so back, if you take it back to 2012 to 2015, when we were really starting to look at strategies and innovative things to do in our community, school-based mental health wasn't really talked about. So in 2015, we did launch our first school-based mental health clinics here at Racine Unified. So that was something very innovative and different. And we were very clear with ourselves about what we were trying to do. So our target population were those students and families living in poverty, experiencing difficulty accessing traditional mental health services in our community. We wanted to really do early identification and treatment of students with mental health issues. So that would assist the child, the family to improve mental well-being and turn into support improved academic success. So those are really kind of our key initiatives. And so we also spent time looking at what were the barriers to receiving services within our community. And we really identified really early on that transportation, competing work-life demands on caregivers, and having a Medicaid or public insurance was also an issue. And so we also researched consequences of if we don't address the mental health needs of our kids early on. We certainly recognize some poor academic achievement, increased school absences, and increased likelihood of some kids being suspended. So those were concerns of ours that we really wanted to address and come around that. And so part of our goals and objectives of putting a school-based mental health clinic into our schools here at Racine Unified was to really improve the function and reduce symptoms of children with a mental health disorder, which was going to reduce those barriers to learning. We also wanted to improve accessibility to mental health services. How convenient it is to have a therapist right embedded in the school. And you'll hear from our partners today, from Christine Jacobs, as she her experiences around being that person that's been embedded into our school culture. We also wanted to really work on improving that school climate towards students with mental health issues, starting to have that conversation around mental health. Wasn't a very common conversation. Pandemic has kind of drove some of that conversation today around mental health. And then we really wanted to look at what professional development programs we needed for our teachers and staff so that we could reduce stigma and increase their knowledge and using classroom tools too to help support those students with mental health concerns. So today, where we sit today, and I took you back to 2015, but I want to bring you up to 21. We have developed collaborative partnerships with two community mental health providers, kind of doing some two different things for us. We have implemented 6 school-based mental health clinics with a full-time therapist in each of our locations with a great partner from Children's Wisconsin. These services are funded by Racine Unified, the Racine Community Foundation, and United Way of Racine County. So without our partners out there helping and coming together around this important issue and services for our kids, those things probably could not happen. Also recognizing too that we're only in 6 of our schools, that we needed to do something for our other schools and our other community members too at large. And so we started a community mental health clinic in 2017, which services all kids in our community. You do not need to go to Racine Unified Schools to be part of this clinic. You can be anybody at any private or parochial school as well can join us and have services at our community mental health clinic. And that partner that we're using is Professional Services Group. And this clinic on our community mental health clinic is funded by Racine Unified School District. So So as we continue to grow, our alignment with great partners at United Way of Racine County has been instrumental in continuing our efforts to address the mental health needs of our students. With the implementation of the United Way Community School, we have been able to leverage additional resources for our students and our families. So the importance of partnerships and growth strategies around meeting the mental health needs of our kids have been so important.
Great. Wow. So there's a lot in there. I would say one of the big things that I hear is by putting mental health services in your schools, it eliminates that need for parents to try to take time off, drive to the school, pick up their child, take them to the mental health professional, have a session, take them back to school, go back to work. That kind of thing is a really big issue. And some people don't have cars. And so if you're relying on public transit, that makes it even that much harder. And then the other thing that I hear here is, and we'll get into this a little bit more and I'll ask more questions, but I think a lot of the public might not realize how much we in schools have grown to understand that some of the issues we used to call discipline are really just response to trauma or unmet mental health needs. And so by doing this, I'm sure you'll be able to tell me later some of the good results that you've seen that maybe aren't even what people would expect. So I really appreciate that great description. So we're talking about a community school model. You mentioned that a few times, Julie. So I'm gonna let Jessica try to describe what we mean by a community school model. And NAP is one of them. I know you're gonna tell us a little bit more, Jessica.
Yeah, absolutely. So NAP was our first community school and has been and continues to be an excellent partner in this work. Community schools is a national model. You see community schools all over the country. Locally, we are part of the Coalition for Community Schools. And so that gives us access to some partners and collaborators and other districts and nonprofits and cross-sector partners that are doing the similar work in their communities. And we all learn and grow from each other. But community schools really make the school the hub of the neighborhood. And the goal of the community school is to improve academic success and academic outcomes for our students by zooming out and providing some holistic support for the students, their families, the staff, parents, and community members. So when you talked about some of those barriers that families encounter when they're trying to access services, things like not having transportation or not being able to maybe leave the workplace in the middle of the day, community schools attempt to alleviate some of those barriers. So in addition to having something like a school-based mental health clinic right on site, we try to bring other services and opportunities also to the school so that we see things like an after-school program happening for our kiddos. And at pickup time, maybe parents come a little bit early so that they can participate in a certification class so that they can advance their own career aspirations. And then instead of going home immediately following that, the families might stay at the school for a community night and get to interact with their peers and classmates and school staff kind of in a family casual setting. We've done family meal programs in the evening. We've had adult education classes taking place right alongside student education classes. We've had community members come in and just utilize the school space because they're there in the community. And we want families to see our community schools not just as a building that's open from 7 to 3 on specific days of the week, but rather a place that is full of individuals and resources and supports to help those families succeed. So it's very much strength-based. We try to understand the aspirations of the students and families and staff and neighborhood and really build on those existing partnerships. It's not to say that when we go into a community school, everything's awful and there's nothing in place. In fact, it's the opposite. There's so many great things, and community school partnerships are cross-sector. They're very dependent on that collaboration between partners, keeping the students at the center of everything that we do together, and working to everybody do what they're really awesome and great at in their own way. So, you know, when you talked about mental health showing up as what maybe used to be seen as behavior issues, it's doing something like having a school-based mental health clinic on site and having an expert like Christine there to work with students and families so that Missy and her team of educators can do what they're awesome at, which is teaching students. So it's really kind of empowering everybody to be the best they can be. Knapp was our first community school, then we added Julian Thomas, and this fall, in a couple of weeks, Mitchell will be our third community school in our partnership with Racine Unified School District, and we are just over the moon about that expansion in our partnerships, and particularly excited and proud that all three of our community schools have or will have school-based mental health clinics.
Excellent. I'm going to take a moment to just do a reintroduction break. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's mental health services is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So, Missy, as the assistant principal at Knapp Elementary, can you tell our listeners how this model works for your students? What's it like in the building with the children?
Yeah, sure. First of all, it's this. We have this awesome, awesome opportunity because of being a community school. We have these resources Jessica was talking about, and you know, I really feel privileged to work here and be able to work with these awesome professionals because everybody has the kids at the center of everything that we're doing. And that is really fulfilling. So there's been a lot of training for our staff on trauma, on mental health, and Christine has played a big role in that in supporting our staff. So she supports the students, but she also works with our staff. And so teachers are coming into this, other staff members in the building are coming in, having this background now in trauma and mental health. So this is just a part of kind of living and breathing at Knapp, right? And so when a teacher has concern for a student and thinks that maybe school-based mental health will be a good option, they contact the school social worker and Christine by filling out a form. And then we kind of meet as a team and decide if school-based mental health really will be the best option, if we want to present it to parents or not. If we decide to go ahead with it, then the social worker reaches out to the family and there's a conversation about what school-based mental health is and the benefits. And then it's really up to the parent if they want to commit to this adventure, right? And then Christine will connect with the parents and she sets up regular scheduled appointments, just like you would if a parent were going to drive their child. These meetings, though, take place during the school day at Knapp. So a student will, Christine walks up to the classroom and pulls the student out for 20 or 30 minutes. The student goes down to her her room. She has her own space in the building, and she completes a professional therapy session with the child. This is such a cool opportunity that we have. We're so fortunate. It removes so many barriers, as the other ladies were talking about. Nobody needs to get the student to the sessions. The parent doesn't need to bridge that gap between the school and the therapist, you know, going back and forth with, well, this is what the therapist said. Well, this is what the school said, you know, because we're meeting regularly. And there's no cost to the family for the services. So those are huge barriers. So we feel really fortunate.
Great. So how does this approach differ from maybe how you dealt with student difficulties before? Perhaps people had undiagnosed mental health needs or other things. Can you tell us a little bit about that part?
Right. So, I mean, and that's a huge thing, what you were talking about before, that so many students are struggling, and that shows itself in behaviors, right? And so having a therapist on staff really allows us to support students rather than just disciplining. And I'm not saying that sometimes kids don't need to go home, and sometimes, you know, I mean, sometimes we need to lose privileges and lose recess, and those things have to happen, right? But this gives us the opportunity to really dig in and figure out what a student needs. We don't feel lost for solutions ever, having this school-based mental health right on site. So adults, kids, everybody, sometimes we need support understanding ourselves. And, you know, as adults, we turn to therapists, and our kids are no different. We really at NAP do believe that kids will do well if they can. They want to do well. And if they have the tools to do well, they will. And so we have a much better chance of helping our kids be successful socially, emotionally, and then academically, right? Because of this program.
Great. So what have been some of the positive measurable results in your school and for your students?
Well, it's exciting to see the data. I think when students are receiving therapy, Julie's really great at tracking the data for us, and she has recorded it so that I can cheat and look at it, and it's really awesome. So in the 2017-2018 school year, there is a cohort of students, right, who are going through therapy, and during that year, 40% of them reduced the number of times that they were sent to the office, which is really really great. 40% is good. But those same students then the following year, 50% of them decreased the number of times they were sent to the office. And the following year after that, in 1920, 63% of those same kids. So some of those kids were still in therapy, and some of them had left, you know, had been discontinued. But either way, we saw, and it trends this way, like in every category of behavior and that we look at, suspensions, office discipline, referrals, it's the same. There's just a real strong trend upward and positive movement for these kids.
So this is a perfect time to turn to Christine and ask her about how she works with students and families within the clinic setting within the schools, and maybe some of the reasons why you see the things you're doing might help reduce the times the students have conflicts within their classrooms.
Sure. Yeah, really good questions. I want to start by pointing out that school-based mental health doesn't replace other supports that are in place for students. Social work, counseling, psychologists, school nurses, these are vital roles to a school. And unfortunately, I think nationally, they're understaffed. We don't have enough of those people in our schools. First of all, being in the school offers me a great opportunity to see it for myself, to see how the kids are acting and behaving. And not just when I'm meeting with them in that little 30 to 45 minute session. You know, I'm moving about the school. I'm walking around and I can see them at lunch, see them with peers, look outside my window, in fact, and there's the playground. So I can observe them at recess and really get a feel for what the grownups in their life are saying might be problems. And then with that, I can also really readily collaborate with the teachers to figure out exactly what they need at school to help, to overcome some of those struggles. And it works out really nice that as school is stressful and problems and behaviors are cropping up, we can kind of target it right away. So it's very, it can be really effective. It can make the therapy feel really applicable and useful.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have a question here that is, what is triple P parenting? I believe Julie is going to address that.
Oh, that right? Christine, do you want to take that?
We were pausing and looking at each other. Yeah, I can talk about triple P parenting. It's an evidence-based parenting education and support program, international. And with that knowledge kind of what that program is, it goes along with working with children's, one of the, I'm obviously biased, but one of the benefits of working with Children's Wisconsin is that it's a child-serving organization. It's a healthcare system dedicated solely to kids. So being a therapist working for Children's, I have access to training and resources specific to children. And Triple P is one of those programs that Children's brought in and trained therapists to be able to deliver this information to parents. So it's a real asset. It's a real advantage of working for Children's that I have access to specific interventions and resources that then I can pass along to kids and families.
So the three P's are what?
So the actual program is Triple P, like triple spelled out. And I don't know that much about the origins of it, but it's meant to, it's a positive parenting program.
Oh, okay.
So maybe that's what the triple P's are for, positive parenting program. Yeah.
So what is the prevalence of mental health problems among young children? Maybe, you know, listeners listening to this are like, well, we didn't have mental health problems with children when I was a child. So maybe we can enlighten our listeners a little bit on that issue.
Yeah, great question. About one in five children will have a mental health problem. But it's really interesting to kind of elevate this, that during the pandemic that we are experiencing, the increased issues with mental health, not only in kids, but in adults as well, has really started for people to have a comfort around mental health and starting to have those conversations with each other. So the prevalence of mental health could be on the increase. One of the good things to know by statistics is really to think about by age 14, about 50% of the diagnosable mental health illness or disorders. So by age 14, 50% of those are already being diagnosed. By the time we're 24, 75% of us will have been in that area of diagnosing of all cases lifetime. So think about that. It's a really early onset. And so when we look at really working within the field of mental health, we're really working on that prevention side. And then we're also working on the early intervention side. Mm-hmm. And so it's really key to look at how mental health does play out. And so it's a really prevalent topic right now around children's mental health. So as families come together, having that comfort and talking about how I'm feeling, my stress, it may lead to some worry or anxiety, doesn't necessarily mean it's a diagnosable mental health disorder. It just means that we have some distress in our life and we have some additional stress in our life that we want to talk through and work out together. So I don't want people to walk away saying, wow, one in five, I better be looking at my kid a lot closer than I am. But really looking at just having that reduction of that stigma around mental health and really starting to think of mental health as buckets of, you know, what is my mental fitness every day? We exercise, right, as physical fitness. But here's a new term being used out there is what's your mental health fitness? How do we take care of us every day so that we're well? And so what are those things that work? The problem during the pandemic is those things that typically work for me, I didn't have access. And right. So you saw a lot of people doing some bike riding, right? Some walking as a family, doing some family things that we could do in our yard together. And so keeping connected with other people, really important. Our virtual tools are so important during this time too. So being that connection with others and relationship with others as humans, that's really important to us. And doing things we're good at every day. What's your skill? What do you like to do? You know, for a while, Ray was baking bread, right? And you're kind of getting back into, but I felt accomplished. I felt like, oh, this turned out really great. Right. And so those are things that we really kind of look at when we talk about mental health.
Right. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of Racine Unified School District's mental health services is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So this is you know, something you're just gonna have to estimate, but how often do you think mental health issues maybe had gone untreated under the old model of having to access a therapist's office, rather than care in the school building?
Yeah, one of the great things to think about, that's an awesome question, is in the past, you know, think about even as a student, when I was a student, we didn't talk about mental health in the school setting, that really wasn't a topic of information. And so there has been this really huge disconnect in our community around mental health, even understanding, I think, on a school side, which kids are actually seeing a community mental health provider. And that still may not, we may not know that. And so I think part of that old model and just that difficulty of accessing services, one of the things that the collaborative identified pretty early on in our work is that we didn't have a coordinated effort in our community around how to access mental health services. It was very difficult. We didn't understand who to call, what to call, what questions to ask. You know, even your insurance, does my insurance pay for this? Oh no, we're not a provider for that insurance, right? And so, you know, when you're in a crisis, getting that hang up phone call from a clinic and not knowing where to go next. So we had some issues, we really did. And so bringing in this model at the time that we did was really around addressing all of those community issues. Like, how do we improve access for our kids and our families so it's simple? One of the other things, Karen, that based on this work and coming out of this old model kind of thinking, like, where are all the things that didn't work? We have now launched a community-wide website in Racine called RacineCountyFamilyResources.com. Built into that website is all kinds of research evidence-based articles, a huge library on a variety of different topics, not all mental health related, of course, but also our mental health resources are there. There's a calendar of events, so if parents want to know what kind of mental health programming is going on in our community, it's a one-stop shop. The other thing, a part of that website, and we're one of the few people across the United States that created within this website a pathway, which we call behavioral health counseling or medication management pathway. So if I'm a community member and I'm like looking for services for myself, maybe my child, you can go on there and you can click on what are the services you're looking for, so medication or counseling. And then you can look at, based on your insurance, which providers in town are taking your insurance. And then you can send off a request for an appointment with that provider, and it's all done web-based. And so it was another way that, as through our community, that we really wanted to improve that access point and understanding where people can access care very simply. So this was another solution that our community has put together. And that funding really came out of a grant that we're working with the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program through the Medical College of Wisconsin. So I think there's a lot of great things happening in Racine and a lot of great movement around how do we improve access for our kids.
And just so listeners know, I will put that website that Julie just mentioned into the show notes for in the archive and also on the Facebook page in the comments in case you want to access. So, Missy, how do you identify students for these services? I mean, do parents come to you? Do physicians call after, something has come up in a medical appointment? How do you find the students who need the services?
Well, parents could call, and parents could connect with our school social worker, and we could go about it that way. Typically, though, what happens is staff members identify a need in a student, and then a team of us collaborates, the counselor, the social worker, our therapist, Christine, sometimes our school psychologist sits in on the meetings, and we talk about what would be the best for the student. And if the team decides that, yeah, maybe school-based mental health would be a good idea, maybe some therapy would be helpful, then we reach out to the family. The social worker kind of bridges that and see if that's what the family is interested in. And then they move ahead with that, and Christine takes it and schedules the appointments.
Okay. And then Christine, how are these school-based services received by parents and families? And you know, how do they access them? I mean, do they have to have insurance, or is there some way to get the services if you are an uninsured family?
Yeah, good questions. Onto the first part about families' receptiveness, it varies. There still is a lot of stigma around mental health. So sometimes families hear that this is being recommended, and even though it's readily available, they just feel that it's not for them. So we're trying to knock down those barriers. School-based mental health, one thing I have noticed being a part of the school, and now I've been at NAP 5 years, word of mouth. So families know each other, and there is conversations that, oh, I got some help for my child. You should call Christine, or you should ask about that program. So it is, for those families who are willing and able to talk about it, it's a great normalizing, and it just knocks that stigma right down for families who can talk about their experience. So I hope more of that can happen. And the longer I'm in the school, you know, I'm optimistic that just my presence is helpful for that. Mm-hmm. But therapy is voluntary. That's the bottom line. And like traditional outpatient therapy, it's billed through insurance. So it is a service provided and billed through insurance. But Children's has a very robust financial assistance program. So if families aren't, for some reason, they didn't have insurance or didn't cover it, I can help them navigate. And I know I'm biased again, but I really do appreciate that Children's has that resource for families if they were not able to meet the financial needs. We want to make it as available to all families as possible.
Great. Well, that's good to know. So these schools that are the current community schools are all elementary schools. Is there anything planned like this or anything available for high schools where, you know, much of the need for mental health services are probably maybe even greater there? I'm not sure.
Karen, that's an excellent question. And this is Julie again from Racine Unified, from the Racine Collaborative for Children's Mental Health. One of the things that we've worked on to start, to at least have a start point, is our community mental health clinic is here to service all kids, especially in those schools that we do not have a mental health clinic in. So we are trying to meet the needs that way. We are, as they kind of putting a growth strategy in for our school-based mental health clinic so that we can provide services in all of our schools. And so we're certainly being innovative and creative with what funding opportunities are out there. I'm really excited to announce two new schools that we will be in this school year. So we're launching a mental health clinic at Mitchell Middle School. So Jessica talked about that. And thanks to some grant funding that we've been able to obtain through United Way of Racine County for our community school. So we're absolutely 100% excited about that. And then we're also be launching another K-8 school would be at Jersted Ogram Elementary, at K-8 school, excuse me. And so we are kind of, as you can see, we're moving up, and our next step is to really start to put some strategic plans around what we can do in our high school setting as well.
Great. So we're almost out of time, as always happens when we have an interesting topic like this. Listeners do enjoy hearing positive stories from our schools. So I don't know how many of you might have a story about a student or a group of students or a family who had some successes they might not have been able to achieve about these in-school services. Does anybody have a story like that that they can share with us?
This is Christine, and I would be very honored if I could share a story. I've had the privilege of, I counted up, it was over 150 kids and families that I've worked with in the school. So I am really privileged that these families let me into their lives. And I've got an idea of a story I can tell you. I've changed some of the details to preserve confidentiality, but the bulk of the facts I've kept so that you can get a real impression of what kind of kids or families I might work with at the school. Imagine a baby who's born in a prison to a mom who's incarcerated and whose father by that time is in fact already dead. That is a rough place to start from. None of us would want to know a baby like that or to have that starting point for a baby. But luckily, this baby had loving and supportive grandparents who were able to raise her. And she was able to have a fairly happy childhood, although missing out on some important relationships early on, for sure. But the story doesn't end there. Imagine this little baby grows up, and at 9 years old, her grandpa, who raised her, gets sick and died. Another loss so early, 9 years old. It gets worse, though. I know you said that we're going to look for something positive, so it's coming. But before we get there, the next tragedy happens when Grandma, in a few months of Grandpa dying, got sick and ended up dying herself. So this now 10-year-old girl, her parents, her birth mom and dad, aren't available for her. And now the people who raised her have passed away. And at 10, she's still expected to go on with life. She has chores and homework and school. So she showed up at open house at Knapp School with her aunt, who had assumed custody of her. And her teacher right away noticed noticed some concerns, because this little girl, we'll call her Annalise, she was actually hiding under the desks and kind of avoiding contact with the teacher. So the teacher couldn't help but bring that up with the aunt, and found out about this child, about Annalise's rough start in life. And also found out that Annalise was acting withdrawn at home, quiet and sad, understandably so. So right away, the teacher was able to think about and recommend school-based mental health. So she was able to give information to the aunt right away. Our social worker got in touch and they started therapy with me. Over the next 9 months, I was able to work with Annalise and her aunt, very supportive. She really wanted to make sure that Annalise was building a relationship with this new family. Sure, she had known her aunt before, but not in the capacity as a primary caregiver. And now she had grown up with Grandma and Grandpa as an only child, but in aunt's home, she had three cousins and a new baby coming. So a busy family that she had to transition into. So that was a really nice experience to see through therapy, that Annalise could work through some of her grief and loss and trauma. And then aunt was able to build a new relationship. They were kind of going through that grief together. This was aunt's mom, by the way, the one who had passed. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a powerful feeling that aunt was so supportive and able to get Annalise this therapy that she needed to participate fully in it. And I saw positive outcomes by the end of that school year, by the end of fifth grade. People were noticing that Annalise seemed happier. She was actually one of the most popular kids in her class, although she necessarily wasn't outspoken and extremely extroverted. She was really well-liked by her peers. She had a really immense talent for drawing. So she got to share that with me. She got to share that with her aunt. She shared that with her classmates. And also I use a symptom assessment, and was able to notice by the time she completed fifth grade, her trauma symptoms were half what they had been when I first started therapy with her. Even positive, a happier ending for this family is that the aunt was so committed to giving Annalise the best life that her and her husband wanted to buy a house and actually move to a smaller community where there could be a bigger yard and more recreation opportunities for the family. How would Annalise have felt even if she got therapy elsewhere, she wouldn't have known other people, other kids? It's very, she would have gone to a clinic that she wasn't familiar with and might see kids and people there in that clinic that she didn't have a relationship with. Versus seeing me, her therapist, at school every day, she knows I interact with other kids. And for instance, even two other kids in her class that year saw me for therapy services. So I have to imagine that really helped her feel a certain, hopefully a positive way about it. So yeah, I don't know exactly what Annalise's outcomes would have been if she hadn't been able to come in and see me and work with me. But I really feel like school-based mental health was a strike while the iron's hot. It was a really need for this family right at that time. And we were able to deliver the service right there when they needed it most.
Okay, well, thank you all so very much. Thanks to our guests, Julie Hiller, Christine Jacobs, Missy Damaschke, and Jessica Safransky-Schott. This is Education Matters, and thank you all very much.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. You're invited to continue.